This podcast was recorded Thursday, January 28th at 10:33 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like somebody else will say they're thinking about running for Rob Portman's Senate seat.
Is there anybody left? Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those snollygosters who shrewdly lay in wait until seats open and then they pounce. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up later in the podcast, the governor extends our bedtime.
That's exciting. But first, we will not have U.S. Senator Rob Portman to kick around anymore. And it is, yep, the thing that we poke fun at him for, his reluctance to take an immediate, definitive stand on controversial issues is why he's getting out. After two terms in the Senate, Portman says it's become too toxic to govern and get things done.
Our country's polarized right now. It's kind of shirts and skins, isn't it? And that makes it more difficult to find that common ground, because elected officials aren't rewarded for that. What they're rewarded for is, you know, throwing out the red meat on the talk show.
You know, I can't get that image out of my head, Steve. Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer playing shirts and skin pickup basketball.
Yeah.
Anyway, Portman's decision stunned Washington and Ohio. All signs pointed to him running for re-election. He has $4.5 million in his campaign account right now. While there was talk of him facing a primary opponent, he would have been a very difficult candidate to beat, both in the primary and against a Democrat in the general election.
He certainly would have. But then Republicans lost control of the Senate. Then came the insurrection. And now Rob Portman, after 30 years in Washington, is coming home to Ohio. Here to talk about this stunner is a woman who has covered Rob Portman for many years as a reporter for the Columbus Dispatch and now as a reporter for Congressional Quarterly Roll Call, Jessica Werman. Welcome to Snollygoster.
Thank you for having me.
I guess, first of all, were you surprised by Portman's announcement?
Actually, that's a weirdly difficult question to answer, because I think Ohio, and especially like Central Ohio, for example, it's got a history of guys who kind of walk away and say, I've kind of had it with this. I mean, Pat Tiberi is the one that I think of most recently, who said, you know, who just sort of got fed up with the status quo in Washington. But, you know, you mentioned 30 years. That's a huge thing to walk away from. He was first elected to the House of Representatives, I think, 1993. So I was like a senior in high school. I mean, he has really made a career of this, of being here in Washington. And so to walk away now, he's still relatively young, is a little bit surprising. But I mean, I guess I feel like I'm kind of vacillating here, because I just didn't think he would necessarily do it, but I'm not particularly surprised that he has. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I thought he may do one more term. I mean, he is 65 years old. It's funny you mentioned he's relatively young. Most of us are thinking about retirement. Most of us think about retirement at 65, where, you know, not every senator has to serve until they're 90, I suppose.
No, but you know, that's kind of what they do these days,
yeah,
right?
I know. I thought he might stick around for one more term, you know, six years, but I'm not surprised either.
I thought about this when I was still covering in Columbus. He really was in sort of a can't win situation, right? Because he was never going to do enough to really appease the conservatives. He's not a Jim Jordan. He's not going to say, oh my God, you know, President Trump won the election. That's just not how he's wired. But then on the other hand, you've got Democrats or even more moderate Republicans who are like, why isn't he telling this guy to, you know, shove off or pound sand? And, you know, why isn't he taking the stand on that? So there were two sides who were really asking him to be something that he wasn't. So he was never really in a situation where he was going to thrill all the people.
Yeah, we often poke fun at him, jokingly, of course, for straddling the fence, because he will not take a stand. Part of that has been President Trump, right? For a long time, Republicans just could not alienate Trump without alienating their base. And again, as you say, he's a very sort of milquetoast, moderate Republican, or at least he appears moderate. He does often toe the Republican.
I've never used the word fire-breathing.
No, he's not a fire-breathing. do you really... Is he really leaving because of the hyper-partisanship, or do you think he feared losing the primary to a firebrand, to a Jim Jordan or somebody along those lines?
Well, I mean, remember when he won in 2016, his spread was like way huger than Donald Trump's. I mean, he really won by a large amount. So he can win statewide.
And that was against Ted Strickland, a pretty popular guy statewide.
Well, yeah. I mean, I could go, like, this is not a long enough podcast to go into all the things I want to talk about with that race. But the thing is, does he want to? Like, is it worth it at this point to have a big bruising primary where, you know, everyone sort of insults you and it's like there's these weird violent undertones now? I mean, is that worth it, you know? I mean, at a certain point, and he really does think of himself as a public servant. And I mean, he really, you know, whether or not how you feel about that is sort of your thing, but that's how he sort of viewed what he did for a living. And, you know, public servants really get the crap beaten out of them these days. I mean, this is not it's not something that makes people want to go, God, you know what I really want to do?
Yeah. Jessica, you know, he complains about hyperpartisanship, but we've mentioned he's been there for 30 years. Mm-hmm. He's complaining about the current state of politics. Well, he is the current state mm-hmm. of politics.
Yeah.
He says he wants to be bipartisan, but let's just take a look at the Supreme Court thing. He supported keeping Antonin Scalia's seat vacant for months before an election, but he pushed to fill Ruth Bader Ginsburg's seat weeks before an election.
Yeah.
Why can't moderates like Rob Portman
stand up? He's not a moderate.
I know, but it's a reasonable. Let's say reasonable conservatives. Yeah. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, not he's moderate in tone, but he is not moderate in politics. He was never moderate in politics. He was like, when he was a representative, he was in one of the most conservative seats in the state. I mean, like it was that and being your seat. That was about as conservative as you can get. So he's never been a moderate. He's just moderate in the way he presents himself.
And why can't those folks push back, form a coalition, and fight against Mitch McConnell? Or maybe they don't want to. Maybe they wanted conservative judges, and there was just ruthless, snollygosterish politics that said, you know what, we can hold this up because we have the majority, and we can rush this through because we have the majority, and elections have consequences, and we did it that way.
Well, and it also stinks to be in the minority. That's no fun. I mean, I remember Dave Hobson, when he left his congressional seat, he said, well, you know, it's just not, I've been in the majority and minority. It's not as fun to be in the minority. So that may be a factor into what Portman is thinking as he makes his decision, or as he made his decision. I mean, he can't get the things out. And when he talks about bipartisan, there is bipartisan stuff that he does. I mean, if I had a quarter for every time that office like came to me wanting me to do a story on energy efficiency legislation, I would be retiring along with Rob Portman. But these were not like thrilling things. This wasn't like, you know, the things that people go, oh my God, you know what I really get juiced to read about is the energy efficiency legislation. But it does do stuff. I mean, it's, you know, it's good public policy, but it's not like, what did he say? The red meat in that intro.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that.
No, as someone else who gets all the Rob Portman press releases, like it sounds like you do a lot, opioids, fighting human trafficking.
Those are interesting.
They are interesting and they're important. Those are some of the things that he's really, really focused on in recent years, as well as cybersecurity issues regarding China. What do you think is his lasting legacy? I mean, he worked in the Bush cabinet. He's a former congressman, now about to be former senator. How do you think Rob Portman is remembered 5, 10, 20 years from now?
I mean, you have to look at that through your political prism. But I think if you're just looking sort of law, you know, raw lawmaker, he was actually somebody who was very familiar with the arcaneness, the minutiae, you know, he was a details guy. He was sort of the back scene. Like he was always, whenever there's a gang of something, it seemed like he was sort of hovering around. He knew how the policy would work. He had extraordinary experience at multiple levels of government that allowed him and gave him sort of a window into how things work. And that's actually very necessary. You don't, you know, you can have like 100 guys who go and scream and shout and beat their chest, hopefully 100 guys and women. But you do need people who actually know the policy and enjoy the policy. And that was, whether you like him or not, something that he was extremely fluent in. He knew the minutiae of, you know, what you or I would call kind of the boring sort of things that made, you know, made things go.
He's a wonk. He's a policy wonk.
He's a wonk.
Is there a future Jessica, for those types of lawmakers, it doesn't seem like it, because we talk about the bills that he talked about, energy efficient, opioid crisis, human trafficking, protecting Lake Erie. You know, that's easy stuff. I mean, that's not really terribly controversial.
Yeah, you never want to be that person who's like, I'm for opioids, you know?
Right. But how about immigration reform?
I'm against education.
Tax reform? How about campaign finance reform to get...
tax reform he was involved in.
Yes, he was. He balanced the budget. That's got to be one of his achievements.
And he was a budget guy.
Yeah.
And he tried... Remember, he was in that... What was that? The super... I can't remember. It's been a couple years, but they actually had to... They were supposed to come up with some sort of solution to the deficit problem, or else we'd have to do sequestration and cut all these guys. Well, that didn't work out so well. So,
yeah, he was a budget hawk. I mean, except when he voted for the Trump tax cuts, but, you know...
This is actually, and I want to be very optimistic, but I do see a lot of these people who, you know, I would not argue for a second that he was a moderate. He was not a moderate. He was a moderate compared to, I mean, when he was elected, he was considered a pretty conservative person, but things have sort of changed, and definitely he was moderate in tone. But I just think, I wonder if there are room for wonks left here, or if you just sort of have to have that star power of being able to get in front of the microphone and make a nice speech. I mean, you see it, like Sherrod Brown and pensions, for example, and banking. That's, you know, he's got sort of wonky sort of perspective there. But I do worry that we often sort of look for sort of on the face of it kind of policymakers, people who are sort of out there, as opposed to people who are really willing to dig deep. That's a concern, but I don't know how valid.
No, I think it's, you need the folks who are willing to get in there and, you know, do the nitty gritty to get stuff done.
Do the dirt of it. I mean, also, like, not to, at risk of getting too geeky, he and Brown worked really well together on pension reform. They were never able to find an answer. But you've got these pensioners, particularly in Northeast Ohio, and this was something that they worked very closely on to try to find an answer so that they could keep their benefits.
Okay, that's great. Enough about working together. Enough about policy. Let's get back to the flame throwing here. And who will follow Rob Portman? One scenario is off the table. Portman will not resign early, allowing Governor DeWine to appoint a replacement, which would obviously, I guess Republicans wouldn't really care either way for now anyway. John Husted also not running. Here is a list first to the Republicans who may run at this point: Jim Jordan, Brad Winstrup, Steve Stein, former Congressman Jim Renacci, GOP Chair Jane Timken, former Ohio Treasurer Josh Mandel, current Secretary of State Frank LaRose, and Attorney General Dave Yost. I'm leaving off there, Jessica?
Well, a couple of Republicans have said no.
Yeah.
A couple of Republicans have said no. John Husted and former Congressman Pat Tiberi have said no. So,
yeah. So. Cranley, on the Democratic side, Cranley, I think, said he's not interested. So,
yeah. But on the Republican side first, is Jim Jordan, should he run? Would you classify him as the favorite? If he ran, would he be the favorite?
He is most certainly the most well-known, I think, among that group. And that is an advantage for him. He's also kind of a, you know, an alienating guy, right? Like, you're either sort of, there's two brands of Republicans in Ohio, and there's the emerging brand, which is more the Jim Jordan brand, more, you know, I don't want to wear a mask, I don't want to, you know, get my vaccine, this is, you know, Trump won. That there's that wing, and then there's the more like traditional,
the Portman wing,
Portman, Voinovich, DeWine, kind of like Chamber of Commerce Republicans. So I think you see, like, if Jordan decides to run, and you can make good arguments for him staying in the House, if he decides to run, it'll be Jordan versus whoever comes out of sort of that other wing of the party. Now, that wing of the party seems to be sort of on the wane. I don't know what happens in a Biden administration, if there's a resurgence or not, but I think it's going to be sort of down to the Jordan and the anti-Jordan candidate, if I'm putting...
Well, yeah, for me, I live in Jim Jordan's district, so perhaps I'm jaded. Perhaps I see too many Jim Jordan signs, but I think it's Jordan against the field here. I think he has Donald Trump star power when it comes to the Republican Party.
I mean, remember, never underestimate the power of your name being known, and his name is definitely known statewide. I mean, a lot of these guys who are House members aren't necessarily known statewide, you know?
He did vote to overturn
the... You might not know who, you know, I don't know, Winstrup is.
Yeah, your thoughts about, I mean, everyone's thoughts about Jim Jordan aside, he did vote to overturn the election. He's a firebrand as much as anyone. But mm-hmm. yeah, he is. I think when it comes to name power, and then what I would think would come to fundraising as well, I think he would be my clear favorite
yeah,
at this point.
You know, he didn't raise a lot of money for a long time. For a long time, I was always looking at his FEC report going, God, I mean, he always filed it early because he just never raised anything. But that has really changed dramatically in the last, you know, when, as he's gotten closer to Trump. And he also didn't really have to spend any money because he always sort of had nominal opposition for many years. So that I do wonder about him as a statewide candidate. I don't know how the Ohio State scandal kind of plays out for him. And I don't know if there are people who are sort of, I don't know. It depends on sort of how much you tie him to Trump, because remember, Trump did, you know, widen his margin by like 30,000 votes in Ohio. So
and Jim Jordan has to run. I think his best shot to run statewide is right now. While Trump is still popular in Ohio, we don't know what's going to happen with Trump, with his legal entanglements. And, you know, mm-hmm. we don't know what's going to, we haven't even talked about the trial in the Senate there. Mm-hmm. But if Trump's popularity and the memory, frankly, just the memory of Trump starts to fade, I think Jim Jordan loses some of his cachet. But right now, Trump is still hot among Jim Jordan Republicans, and if he's going to run statewide, I think he's got to do it now.
This would be the time. Yeah. Like, I mean, there's a lot of speculation about what does he want to do when he grows up. Does he want to be Speaker of the House? Does he want to chair the Judiciary Committee, which he's ranking member of it now? So, my God, he's, you know, he's one majority away from it. But this seems like kind of a why not? These Senate seats rarely come open. So, you know, it would seem like this would be a pretty prime opportunity. Now, I haven't talked to him about this. I've definitely put in calls to him, but he hasn't really commented on it. It seems like this would be sort of lined up with his political ascendance, but we'll you know.
Unless he plans on primarying Mike DeWine in 2022.
I mean, you know, if you were like making that decision, would you say, I'm going to primary this guy, so I have to fight with him?
Yeah.
Or am I going to take this nice open seat?
Mm-hmm. I hear you.
Mike DeWine is, frankly, the biggest beneficiary of this announcement, because this this waters down his potential primary field, because all of a sudden they're going to say, well, forget Mike DeWine. I'm going to go for this open seat. So
yeah, exactly. Over here. Look at the shiny thing over here. Yeah.
DeWine would have been hard to beat anyway, but this definitely makes his path even easier, I think.
Yeah. I mean, see, I am also from the Jordan district. That's where I live near Washington now, but I'm from that Jordan district originally. So I see when I look at Republicans in the state, I mean, I really see it from the prism of the Jim Jordan world, because that's, you know, the world that I...
Well, Jessica, to be fair, Jessica, you could live almost anywhere in Ohio and be in Jim Jordan's district.
Yeah, I've never lived in Cleveland, so I can't speak for Cleveland.
It stretches from Cincinnati to Lake Erie. So.
I know, that is the weird. That was my favorite hobby during redistricting, was to look at, like, how are they messing with Jim Jordan today?
That's the other thing, too, is his district is not going to be as uncompetitive as it is now, because it can't be. Realistically, it cannot be. It's going to be more competitive, so he may have less to lose by running for Senate.
It could conceivably be eliminated if we lose a seat in Congress.
Yeah. I don't know about that.
I hear you. He has some sway there. Let's turn now to Democrats who would have been big underdogs against Rob Portman. Now they are just sort of mild underdogs, I guess you would say. Some of the people who may be running at this point, Tim Ryan and Joyce Beatty, both congresspeople from Ohio, obviously. Dayton Mayor Nan Whaley, former Columbus Mayor Michael Coleman, former congressional candidate Danny O'Connor, and the wild card, former Ohio Health Director Dr. Amy Acton.
Someone mentioned her to me like the first day, and I was like, that seems so weird. I didn't even put it in my story, but you know, stranger things have happened. So.
She was mentioned as a possible opponent for Rob Portman before he announced he was not going to run, and I think that's a long shot. She's never run for elective office before. She's very popular among Democrats.
You'd think her very bruising and weird experience being DeWine's public health director would have scared her off. So who knows? I mean, you know.
Yeah, she's got people now, which was another sign that maybe she's got bigger plans. we kept trying to get an interview with her, and we had to go through her people. And I was like, oh, that's a sign that something's up. But anyway.
When you have people, look out. You know, it's funny when you were mentioning the list of Democrats and how they haven't really done much statewide. I was thinking of that Dumb and Dumber Jim Carrey quote, "Wait, you're telling me there's a chance, right?" You know?
Yeah.
Well, and like there is a little bit more of a chance now because he was kind of thought to be very unbeatable during the whole, you know, Portman was thought during the last election, it would be, even though Strickland's kind of popular, he had a lot of money, he had a lot of support, it was a presidential year. Now it's a slightly different circumstance. I'm thinking of these names though, and none of them have sort of the nationwide or statewide recognition.
No.
Tim Ryan, maybe. I think Tim Ryan, you know, he ran for president. I think he was.
Yeah, that's true. That helped him.
He was on. People said that his run for president was a warm up to run for governor or Senate just to boost his name recognition. So I think
I was just excited he ran because a lot of times he has not really necessarily, I mean, he hints and flirts with it, but then he never, you know, pulls the trigger. So
he did leave before his congressional filing deadline though. So he ran, but he didn't run.
Yeah.
So he's another guy whose district his district could be.
Yeah, his district actually might go bye-bye. So yeah, he would be the one over Jordan where he would probably kind of run out of necessity, though I'm told he was actually doing some serious work for a gubernatorial bid. But I mean, this is, like I said, this is a nice open opportunity. So, and we already have a Democratic senator, so we know it can be done in the state.
And Tim Ryan has that working class vibe similar to Sherrod Brown. Another guy we didn't mention is David Peppert, former Democratic party chair. He was sort of lining up to run for mayor of Cincinnati, and now he's kind of put the brakes on that. And he might be running for this seat. And he's another guy who's got that sort of working class appeal. And he's got a lot of goodwill he's built up among, you know, Democratic candidates around the state. So he's a guy to watch as well, I think.
Dave, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think at this point, like the two I'm really looking at would be Whaley and Ryan. Now, this is today. This is a moment in time. Things can change dramatically. But it's in my mind, those would be the two candidates to beat. Or the two most likely candidates. Whaley has a pretty strong record as Dayton mayor. She's not as well known statewide, but remember she did run for governor before.
Yeah, in 2018.
Yeah. So, I mean, and I think she'd be formidable, like on a debate stage. She's very, very intelligent. Tim Ryan, of course, has his presidential contest pass. So he's been out there. I think those would be the two most likely, but again, this is just the moment in time we're talking in now.
Yeah.
Can Democrats somehow clone Sherrod Brown, or can he? Can they somehow change the law so he can hold two seats at once?
Well, that would be a very strange picture, wouldn't it? you know, the thing I like about Tim Ryan is he actually made some very good points during his bid against Nancy Pelosi about the future of the party and speaking to working class voters in a way that maybe Pelosi has not. I think that those were very valid points that are worth listening to. So that I think probably might help him going forward, whatever he decides to do, whether it's governor or Senate.
Yeah, this is a chance for Democrats, even if they don't win, because these are still kind of long shots. I mean, DeWine's going to be very popular, hard to beat, and
it's a Republican state. I mean,
we still lean very red. Yeah.
Yeah, we used to always say swing state. I think it can. It can turn blue on occasion, but it's been so long that it's just, I mean, if you're going to say it's like a purple state, it's like a really reddish purple.
But this could be a chance for younger Democrats like a Nan Whaley. I mean, Tim Ryan is not that young, but I mean, the mayor down in Cincinnati, Cranley, David Pepper is still fairly young, for them to get their name out there and run statewide for future races. And the Democrats have just, their bench is so thin. This might, even if they don't win, it gives them an opportunity to raise some money, build some goodwill, and build some name recognition. So,
yeah, they really need to work on their farm team. I think that's always been sort of the conventional wisdom, and that really has not changed.
Jessica Werman, former Dispatch, Columbus Dispatch reporter. Nice to hear your voice again.
Also, thanks. I hope I didn't super out and super like over nerd with you guys, but
no, we
that's what we're for.
We like nerdy.
Well, then you're in luck.
We like nerdy with an edge. Let's put it that way.
Yes, edgy and nerdy. I'm cool with that.
Just to give your current employer a plug, she's now with Congressional Quarterly Roll Call. She's working there in Washington. You can read her stuff there. Jessica Werman, thanks for joining us on Snollygoster.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jessica. We'll be right back.
On All Sides with Ann Fisher, we cover the topics that affect life in Central Ohio, from immigration to the economy to the continuing opioid crisis.
But the reality is, if you don't save someone who's overdosed, they have no opportunity to recover.
Hear thoughtful, in-depth conversations about the issues that matter now. Subscribe to the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media. Governor DeWine says we can stay out later now, Mike.
That's right. The governor extended the state's curfew from 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock p.m., of course. That means bars and restaurants and any stores that want to stay open can now stay open until 11 p.m.
Congratulations to them, or at least their bottom lines. They can do this because the rate of COVID-19 hospitalizations is going down. For 7 days in a row, Ohio has seen the total number of people hospitalized under 3,500. And if we can get below 3,000 for 7 days, the curfew will be extended to midnight. Get below 2,500, then no more curfew at all. We could conceivably go to the bar till 2 a.m., Mike.
Imagine that. That just seems so strange at this point, because my 2 a.m. days are well behind me now.
Your kids, your kids could go to the bar till 2 a.m.
Yeah, but anyway, it is, you know, it's good news. Cases are going down. We're at, you know, we were at 10,000 a day not that long ago. Now we're at around 4,000 a day. As a result, hospitalizations are coming down, deaths are down. Maybe we have turned a corner here. We can only hope.
Yeah, I was listening back to some of my newscasts from last summer, and it was pretty incredible that at the time it was very newsworthy that we had jumped over 1,000 cases a day. And just listening, you know, to the fraught tone of everything last summer, we're like, oh, this fall spike is coming. We could get above 2,000 cases per day. And then by Thanksgiving, it was just zoom right up to 10,000 or so. Yeah, I don't know. This curfew was imposed in mid-November when hospitalizations were about 4,000 a day and rising. So numbers-wise, DeWine is being consistent here, but
yeah, he when the numbers got up to 4,000 hospitalization numbers, that was the concern. Are we overwhelming hospitals? Are we overwhelming the staff? And when the numbers hit that 3,500 to 4,000, that's when he imposed the curfew. Now that it's coming back down and heading down, he's pulling back on the curfew. So I think you have to give him props for being consistent there. I just hope that he's not doing it too early, and then we send people back to the bars and cases spike up again. But he says if that happens, he will reimpose the curfew. But it's hard to do that after you've, you know, pulled the plug.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it just seems like common sense, I guess, but he's really not been able to show any definitive evidence that the curfew helped contain the spread. You know, when cases were taking off, like we said, he imposed the curfew, heavily promoted mask wearing, pleaded with Ohioans to stay apart, avoid socializing with non-household members, and cases did level off. Cases have since skyrocketed, and again, no evidence that this curfew really has any effect. And we also need to say this curfew has been widely unenforced. It's also full of exemptions. I think a lot of people would be surprised to know that we even still have a curfew. It's not largely followed.
I think the bars are closing at 10. I think that, I mean, when it comes to orders that you and I stay home at 10 o'clock, that's not happening. People going out to, you know, parties perhaps after 10 o'clock, but the bars were for the most part shutting down, and they were complaining that, for instance, during the NFL season, if there was a Monday night game or a Sunday night game, or the Buckeyes were playing in the evening, mm-hmm. that nobody would show up, because even if they had separation between tables and things like that, the kickoff was at 7:30, you know, by 10 o'clock, it's only halftime. So people weren't showing up. So it's the Super Bowl next week, not this week, but next week. And so now bars will be able to probably host Super Bowl socially distanced parties, because the kickoff will be around 6 and it'll be over by 11. Maybe when it goes to overtime, it's midnight, we can even stay at the bar. So I think it's good news for bar owners. I think the ones that are playing by the rules deserve a bit of a break. I just hope that it's not too early.
Anyway, now moving on to our Snollygoster of the Week. That's the award that we give out to the shrewdest politician or political move. And this week it goes to someone we have already mentioned in the program, Nan Whaley. The Dayton mayor is well known in Democratic circles. She made a field run for governor in 2018. Now she's often named whenever there's a statewide race opening up. So we doubt it's a coincidence that a lengthy interview with her ended up in the New York Times one day after Rob Portman's announcement.
Some of our favorite quotes in the article, she mentions the close governor's race of 2018 and the tough presidential races in recent years. I guess the 2018 governor's race was kind of close because DeWine won by a little more than 4 points. But certainly the last two presidential elections here were not that close. She also mentions the true civil war within the Republican Party.
The true civil war. Good quote, Nan Whaley. We know politics is all about timing, so don't want to be too harsh on her here. But Nan Whaley, for pouncing on the opportunity to talk to the New York Times about your future hours after Rob Portman announced he would not seek re-election, you are our Snollygoster of the week.
Whether I wonder who called who. Either way, it was a lucky and or shrewd move. So
fortunate timing,
deserving of our award.
If you have a suggestion for next week, you can email it to snollygoster@wosu.org. Also, be sure to give us a good review on iTunes, wherever else you get your podcast. And as always, just tell your friends about us. Help get the word out. For our audio producer, Eric French, our student producer, Jack Long, and our web producer, Michael DeVonis, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.